This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the dealio? Permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Thanks, everybody, for sharing your Wednesday morning with us. Coming up here in approximately 20 minutes from now, Ramona Shelburne's going to join us. One of the really solid, insightful NBA ESPN reporters. She'll talk to us about the crazy NBA offseason, one of the craziest perhaps ever in terms of player movement. And also, she has done a deep dive on the Donald Sterling tapes and a moment that kind of changed the NBA. Before Donald Sterling was kicked out of the league, the Clippers were a joke, a farce, a punchline. Today, they have arguably the best odds at winning the NBA championship. So we'll talk to Ramona Shelburne about that coming up here in about 20 minutes from now. Also later on in this hour, Carly Lloyd, her coach, said that she is seriously considering trying out for an NFL kicker position, but not until next year. Could it happen? Your phone number is 855-212-4CBS. Ironically, that's my phone number as well to call me. 855-212-4227. And on Twitter, DA on CBS. Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown in the news because, well, it's a day that ends in Y. Antonio Brown shot back at the supposed friendship of Ben Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger is, number one, no longer doing his weekly radio show, and that's what got him into hot water in recent years. Last year, Roethlisberger had called out Antonio Brown for running the wrong route. Had also called out others, and that, we believe, led to animosity and resentment, maybe even more so than before, between Antonio Brown and Roethlisberger, and kind of led to unnecessary distractions every single week. Now, here's what I think about Roethlisberger and that radio show. It's good radio. It's really good radio when you have a quarterback who is willing to criticize. That's so rare. Tom Brady does a radio interview with WEEI in Boston every single week. It's almost never interesting because Tom Brady purposely does not want it to be interesting. And he is never going to criticize anything. So Roethlisberger's radio spot was good radio, but it was not beneficial to the Steelers. And Roethlisberger, I think, has become, I think he's already got a big ego, always had a big ego. And I think once he won two Super Bowls and was in that pantheon of Steelers greats, then his ego even got more out of control. And I think that the Steelers organization kind of coddled him and protected him. And that Roethlisberger has felt for a long time that he could probably do no wrong. And so he felt entitled and empowered to call out other people and do this radio show and feel like, you know what, I'm the teacher, they're the students. And when you had their GM this offseason say that essentially Roethlisberger's the only adult in the room and that it's 52 other kids, it sent the message, it underscored the message that Roethlisberger feels, looks at himself as the adult in the room. And that's a really dysfunctional relationship to have with other adults in your workplace. I mean, could you imagine if you went to work every single day and felt like all these other grown adults that were around you were all kids, those that were in their late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, what have you, that you basically had to teach them all, that you were running a summer camp. I mean, that's a bad way to look at your coworkers. It's a bad way to run a business. It's just a bad way to view things around you unless, you know, you're running a summer pool and it's a bunch of high school kids there for the summer going, waiting to go back to school in the fall. So I think Roethlisberger got too entitled. He was too empowered to shoot off at the mouth and to feel like he was above reproach and his players, that they needed to learn from him. Now, it's a delicate situation because Roethlisberger's really good. One day he's likely to be in Canton, and he's won two Super Bowls and been to a third, and there is stuff to learn from a guy like that, just like there's stuff to learn from Drew Brees and Tom Brady and Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers and Aaron Rodgers. There's stuff to learn from those guys. But he used it as a brick to bang over people's head. And I could understand Antonio Brown resenting that. And I could understand teammates saying, hey, man, talk to me privately. You don't have to go on your radio show to do it. That's bad business. It's bad for teammates. And so Roethlisberger has finally gotten the message, don't do that this year. Don't do the radio show. That's a good step in the right direction. But now, as much blame as I would put on Roethlisberger and the Steelers organization for creating a problematic relationship between Ben and everybody else, I think now Ben is trying, even if it's just superficial, to say the right things. And now it's Antonio Brown who can't let it go. Because really, Roethlisberger at this point in time is just saying things that we know they're not even meant to really be taken seriously. I mean, I think we all know that there are quotes in sports that are meant to just be words strung together because you have to answer a question, right? And Roethlisberger was talking to Michelle Tafoya and was asked whether he regretted calling out AB last season. And Roethlisberger said, I wish I wouldn't have done it. Obviously, we saw what happened. Obviously, it ruined a friendship. I just got caught up in emotion in the heat of the battle. Okay, now, again, is it the heat of the battle? Who knows? I mean, it's the day after or during the week. Is he really in the heat of the battle anymore? He felt empowered to call out his teammates because the Steelers organization let him do that. And at that point in time, he has essentially said nothing offensive there. It ruined a friendship. I wish I wouldn't have done it, blah, blah, blah. After he actually said it last year, AB was like, no big deal. That's how Roethlisberger motivates. No big deal. So at the time, AB said the right things. Now, I don't know if he was coached by the Steelers to say the right things or at that time knew be the bigger man. But clearly, AB is over being the bigger man. Because even yesterday, AB subtweets this interview with this quote with Big Ben and calls him out. And now we're at the point where it's like, now, AB, you really got to move on. He says, never friends, just had to get to my ends. Shut up already. I mean, I really don't blame Roethlisberger here for answering that question that way. Of course, Antonio Brown's been the biggest story of the offseason. Of course, he left the Steelers in a blaze of inglory. And of course, Ben Roethlisberger is going to be asked about pushing AB out of town. So what's Roethlisberger going to do there? All right, maybe is he putting a little lipstick on the pig by saying they had a friendship? I guess. But, I mean, at some point, AB's got to let go. And I just think that this is a problem for Antonio Brown. I think he's still too emotionally entrenched in what happened. And I think that's going to be a distraction for him all season long. I think that will end up being a distraction for him for the rest of his career. I don't think he's able to shake whatever happened or will happen. He's just too into that. And I think that's ultimately a problem with it, Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham. They're so consumed by what had happened, it's very difficult for them to move on. And if they're really going to be their greatest selves and they're two great players, they've got to shake that. I mean, caring about whether Roethlisberger said you had a friendship or not is so unproductive to being the best Antonio Brown. And some of that can be fuel, but most of that is just a distraction. Hit me up, 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, DA on CBS. We've talked a lot about Andrew Luck's decision to retire. And one of his teammates, an offensive lineman at Stanford, had an interesting quote. David DeCastro told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, "It's just sad. People treat us like we're circus animals. I talked to him the other day. His life, it's been tough. I don't think people understand how hard it is on the body and the mind. When you play the game, you know how hard it is. He did it the right way and was very professional about it." Look, Dave DeCastro is right here. When we project what we think other people's careers should be, their decisions should be, their timing should be, I mean, we end up treating them like circus animals. Here is Andrew Luck, who has only done everything right his entire career. He has only been the best student and come back to Stanford to finish a degree and chosen a difficult educational path and went to a football program that was not a winner and was drafted by a terrible team and immediately made them winners. And has said he loves Indianapolis and that that's his home. He's been a winner. He's been a great teammate. He's been a great employee. He's never gotten into trouble off the football field. He's been everything you could possibly want in a franchise quarterback. And had he stayed healthy, his career likely would have taken him to Canton. And A, he was booed, and B, he was called selfish, and C, he was said that his decision was indefensible. Talk about skewing your priorities here. There are so many other people in sports to train the bow and arrow on, and Andrew Luck got it because of timing? DeCastro is absolutely right. David DeCastro is absolutely right. This is when we treat them like circus animals. That might have been exactly what Andrew Luck wanted to say to the people that were booing him as well. Maybe that was what Andrew Luck wanted to say to Doug Gottlieb if he thought that Gottlieb's name was Dave Gottlieb. "I'll do whatever I want, Dave! Dave!" When we come back here on the DA Show, Ramona Shelburne's going to join us after one of the craziest offseasons in NBA history and how the Clippers went from punchline to NBA championship favorites. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
Speaking of the devil, we was just talking about the DA Show. I mean, he looks like somebody that's going to steal your tax money. He looks like a white-collar criminal. You can never trust a dude with good hair like that with two buttons down.
Two buttons down is the telltale sign?
Yeah, one, two, yeah, you can almost see a sternum.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
I do have really good hair.
Aw, I love the da.
This Sunday, the stakes are high, starting with the finals of the 2019 Tachi Palace World's Strongest Man, presented by Rogue, followed by Lucas Oil Off-Road Racing. Then it's off to L.A., where one team puts their stamp on the season and raises the trophy in the Big 3 Basketball Championship, only on CBS. Now, full episodes of the DA Show are available on iTunes, radio.com, and other places that podcasts are available. So listen to anything that you may have missed or want to hear again. Also, you can listen on our website, cbssportsradio.com, whenever or wherever you are. Our friend Dixieland Dan joins us. He's listening on radio.com in Oxford, Mississippi, and it sounds like he has a late trashing to throw into the fray after yesterday. Dixieland Dan, good morning.
Mothership, redneck above the mothership.
Permission granted.
Man, look here. I'm sorry I missed yesterday, but my wife is having a little medical procedure. Everything's okay. Everything turned out fine, but I'm missing the trash Tuesday yesterday.
Good.
So, yesterday afternoon, I was doing a little woodwork over around my wood shop over there. Oh, I need a piece of wood. So I walked out to the lumber rack. Something flew by my ear. I said, what in the world is that? So I got to looking. I don't know what you, if you know what these things are. I found me a nest of yellow jackets.
Oof.
You know what those are? They're little sugar honey iced teas with wings is what they are. They
yeah.
suck.
Yeah.
So, well, I got up this morning at 4, my usual time, got my can of gas, walked out there, was going to doctor on them, and they were underneath a piece of wood. So I grabbed a hold of that piece of wood, and these little turds have done dug a tunnel completely under that piece of wood, and I was standing straddler their dead gum hole. So guess what they did? They decided to come out there and just eat me up.
Oh. Let's face it. That's straight trash.
I have had the swarms of yellow jackets get after you, and it is not a pretty sight. We have trashed the yellow jackets for Dixieland Dan's sake. Now, the NBA's offseason was one of the craziest, perhaps, ever, and it vaulted the Los Angeles Clippers into the conversation of favorites to win the NBA Finals. And it wasn't that long ago when the Clippers were a laughingstock in the NBA. How dramatically things have changed, and primarily because Donald Sterling's no longer there. 5 years ago, the tapes came out of him being overtly racist, and the NBA basically forced him to sell. Steve Ballmer came in. Well, ESPN is doing a deep dive on these tapes, and Ramona Shelburne is at the center of that. She's one of the best NBA reporters in the game today, and she joins us this morning on the show. Ramona, good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm sitting at some offices here in New York. Talking about like the wildest story I've ever covered, and then decided to do just go even deeper into the sleaze, right?
Yeah.
Figure out how this guy existed in the NBA in Los Angeles for all these years.
Yeah, so let's start there. Before the tapes were released, Donald Sterling had so many instances where players and other people around the NBA really disliked him and thought that he was kind of, you know, the worst owner in the NBA. How did he last for so long despite having that reputation?
So there's a good answer, and then there's the real answer, okay? The good answer to that is, well, there was never a tape before. There was never TMZ. He didn't get caught red-handed, right? Like, that's the easy explanation, right? The real answer is that the NBA tried to get rid of him 30 years ago, ended up in court, lost, and never had the stomach for it again. I mean, this idea, I mean, Donald Sterling was a trained litigator. He loved to go to court. He loved depositions. He wasn't scared of a court battle. He had lawyers on retainer, and he was going to use them, right? Like, any coach who ever coached for him knew, like, if they got fired, they were going to have to go to court to get the rest of their contract paid out, right? And so I think the NBA had this idea of, like, man, if we go at Donald Sterling, we best not miss. You know, he's got to do something where we know it would stand up in court, and just nothing ever got to a place where they felt like they could. And I think they weren't all that motivated to. One, I don't think they had the stomach for that fight, but also there's probably 29 other owners in the league that weren't that upset that a guy from the Clippers, who were like a sleeping giant, was, you know, that the Clippers were bad. I mean, it was like 2 wins on the schedule every year as you go through L.A. You know,
yeah.
Okay, they're not a threat.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So the idea that the NBA would say, oh, this is unacceptable, the owners would say we can't have this, et cetera, it really wasn't necessarily honest, because the other 29 owners probably didn't hate him as much as he should have been hated, right?
Yeah, you know, one owner told me he was kind of like your creepy old uncle, you know, but he didn't go to, like, the Board of Governors meetings all the time, especially in his later years. Like, early on, he would go all the time, and he was a pain in everybody's, you know, in the butt for everybody. But after a while, he just kind of receded. He just wasn't really a real factor for any of the other owners or any of the other people. And I think that, you know, because they didn't see him, because the Clippers weren't a threat, like, they were just fine. It's like living in a neighborhood where there's a neighbor who's got their house painted pink and the lawn's all gross, and, you know, it's not great for your property values, but, you know, what are you going to do? You can't force them to sell. Just hope they don't bring hope it doesn't spill out into the yard, right? Like, you know, you don't have to see them too much. You just kind of drive by and close your eyes. I mean, I think that's kind of the way the rest of the league looked at him.
Yeah. Ramona Shelburne joins us. ESPN has a 30 for 30 podcast series, The Sterling Affairs, kind of digging deeper into the Donald Sterling tapes and what happened there 5 years ago. Having covered it when it happened, now digging deeper into it, what has been maybe an eye-opening or surprising revelation that you've had digging deeper into it?
I think the tapes and the way the NBA dealt with it was so dramatic that we can't remember what the league was like before. But the idea that an owner would come into a locker room and ogle players and talk about how, ooh, look at their beautiful bodies and their muscles, like, that wouldn't happen anymore. Like, if that ever happened any time, like, a player would complain about it publicly, and then the league would deal with it. But this happened routinely for 30 years, right? Like, I think, like, we all know the depth of, you know, how horrible the tape was that Bisticciano made when he's making all these racist statements, and then that bizarre Anderson Cooper interview that he does later. We all know about that, but, like, it's just the level of cringeworthy behavior of, like, you know, abusive behavior where he's heckling players from the courtside seats. Like, it just wouldn't happen anymore. Like, there would just be, like, an easy fix. Like, players would speak out, and they would actually feel empowered to speak out. And so I think that was what was so, when you dig into it, like, you know, a lot of people, when they talk now, it's like they can't even remember a time when things were different, because that's how fundamentally this changed the league.
You know, Adam Silver is kind of known as a friend of the players, very player-friendly, player-centric. And he was only on the job for about 90 days when this thing dropped.
Yeah.
Had David Stern still been the commissioner, do you think that there would have been such an immediate reaction and removal of Donald Sterling?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? You know, I mean, maybe $2 billion question if we're using that analogy, right? You know, David Stern was the commissioner, and he had this, you know, this funny line. We talked to Alan Rothenberg. Remember him from USA Soccer? But he used to work for the Clippers for a lot of years, and he was the guy that David Stern appointed to, you know, kind of babysit Donald Sterling after he, you know, wasn't paying the players and, like, wasn't, you know, getting them athletic tape and socks and, like, just bare minimum owner activities, right? Like, so he sent Donald, you know, he sent Alan Rothenberg out to kind of, you know, babysit him and give the league some cover. And Alan Rothenberg is one of the guys who recommends that Donald Sterling move from San Diego to Los Angeles, because there's like an opening. Al Davis moves the Raiders. They win in court. They're going to win an antitrust lawsuit. And so the NBA wasn't going to stop Donald. So, like, Alan recommends that. And Donald just does it. And you know, Alan Rothenberg said, he goes, I went to David Stern's retirement party and I showed up, and David was like, what are you doing here? You were the cause of one of the worst things in my career there. I mean, yeah. I think David regrets, you know, not being able to do anything about it. He declined to comment for this podcast, so it's hard to say. I gave him multiple chances to talk about it. Certainly not a proud part of his legacy. But, you know, Adam Silver, in his interview for this, you know, he has a really interesting quote. He says, you know, I think I would have ended up in the same place, but in some ways, my newness to the job helped, because he was able to make this decision without having to think about all of the other things he would be thinking about now, like all the other considerations, the slippery slope, what this means for owners, the message it sends, et cetera, the precedents. He just made it from a moral high ground, and knowing that the players were so upset that they were about to boycott, it just made the decision easy for him. It certainly wasn't an easy thing to do, but it made the decision easy and helped him feel right about it.
Yeah, that's interesting. ESPN's 30 for 30 podcast series, The Sterling Affairs, available now everywhere for download. More details can be found at 30for30podcasts.com. Ramona Shelburne is at the center of this, and it's a really cool project and a really interesting look at the NBA and the culture that happened before and now after. Ramona, thanks so much for the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ramona Shelburne from ESPN joining us this morning on the show. It is kind of impossible to believe that once happened, where you had an owner that was just that disgusting in one of the most popular leagues in the world. And think about how everything changed. That once he was forced to sell and Steve Ballmer came in, immediately the Clippers went from an organization that the players hated the owner to the players loving the owner. And 5 years later, that ends up with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George on a team that is favored to go to the NBA Finals. I mean, you know, for those of us that grew up in the 80s or 90s, or even before then, the idea that the Clippers would be the favorite to win the NBA championship, it would be like waking up one morning. God, I want to say the Cleveland Browns, but the Browns are one of the favorites. It'd be like waking up in the morning and the Detroit Lions are favored with the Cincinnati Bengals as the two best teams of the NFL. You're like, how the hell did this happen? How did that happen?
How did that happen?
You just can't even fathom it being a real thing. And it is all because, now they were slightly competitive under Donald Sterling. You know, they had started to assemble the Lob City Clippers and have some success there. But you know, it was a long time coming, because under Donald Sterling's reign of the 80s and 90s, it was an absolute puke fest every single day. And constant turmoil and constant controversy, and nobody wanted to play there. And it was L.A., and here we are 5 years later, and Steve Ballmer knew, oh, I got potential here buying this. $2 billion, let's do the damn thing. And now he's a favorite to win the NBA championship. He's just screaming, just so much screaming from Ballmer.
Yeah, let's do this. Toughness. We're going to be tough. We're going to be tougher than anybody. We're going to win. We're the NBA Finals, man. Yeah, we're tough, and we got Kawhi. Yeah.
When we come back, oh, I have a headache now. When we come back, can Carly Lloyd become the first female NFL kicker? Sounds like she's actually thinking about it. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
We are the glitch in the simulation.
I hate initial guy, like Antonio Brown was with the AB. Initial guy stinks.
Kind of like, you know, DA.
Oh.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Everyone, quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Homeowners, renters, motorcycle insurance, too. Get it all. Geico.com. You can listen to us across the great CBS Sports Radio Network every single day on all of our wonderful terrestrial affiliates. Also, you can listen to us on SiriusXM Channel 206. And you can listen to us on your phone using radio.com. Listening to Apple Music, listening to the CBS Sports app, or by simply watching us at watchda.com. So Carly Lloyd, whose video went viral last week when she drilled a 55-yard field goal at Eagles camp, apparently is open to an NFL try. Her coach spoke on the record about this and said that if she does it, she would do it for next year, 2020, not this year. And I think that's smart. If you really want to try out to be an NFL kicker, giving yourself a full year to work on technique and consistency, going into next summer, working out with teams, A team, training camp, what have you, into the right play instead of trying to thrust yourself in there 9 days before the season begins. Her coach said, quote, if she's going to do this, she'll do it. She'll train in the offseason. She'll get herself ready so that she doesn't just do it for the sake of doing it. If she's going to do it, she's going to do it so that she can be a success. Carly Lloyd told Fox Sports, I'm having discussions with my husband and my coach about the reality of playing in the NFL. They both feel like I could do it and I should consider it, so I'm seriously considering it as it's a challenge. Now, Carly Lloyd, those that kind of poo-pooed Lloyd's kick were saying, well, she took five steps to line up and kick it. In the NFL, usually you can only really do two. And it was only in practice. It wasn't in the stadium. There was no blocker. There was no defensive lineman jumping up there. What would happen if she would have to tackle on a kickoff? Well, let's pick these apart one by one. Because I believe in my lifetime, and I'm 40 now. I'm a man. I'm 40. I will see a female kicker in the NFL. Number one, The run-up, 5 steps instead of 2. Definitely something she'd have to work on. And who knows? She might line up and with 2 steps not be able to get the same power or torque, and a 55-yard field goal from 5 steps out might be a 55-yard shank, or it might be a 48-yard miss, or she might come up with a 42-yarder that falls short on anything over that. And so that's absolutely part of the equation here if you want to make it to the NFL. As for defensive linemen, offensive linemen, people blocking you, no question. You've got to have that arc over that. And again, you're doing things in a huge stadium, pressurized situations, 60, 70, 80,000 people in the crowd. These are much different than kicking at a practice field for one viral video. As for kickoffs, tackling, returners, look, let's be honest. That's a far cry from what is demanded of the position. Number one, most kickers don't get their nose dirty anyway on any kickoff. You almost never see. I mean, it becomes a highlight when a kicker makes a tackle. Really, that's now a highlight. Oh my God, the kicker actually cared enough to make a tackle. Most kickers do the ole. They let them go by. They fake like they're going to try and run out of bounds. They're almost never the ones making the tackle. So give me a break. That's not a good enough reason. Like, nobody wouldn't sign a kicker, a male kicker these days, because he doesn't make tackles. If that guy lined up and stroked 55-yarders but said, I can't tackle anybody, I'm not going to do it, nobody's saying no to that guy. Right? It wasn't like Martin Gramatica went out there and was like, oh, man, I want to light some dude up. No. If your returner got anywhere near Gramatica, those Gramaticas were going to bury themselves in the dirt. Oh, my God, no, please. So stop with that. Also, you could have her kick field goals and just have a specialist be out there for the actual kickoffs. And the Colts don't let Adam Vinatieri actually kick off either. So, please. Now, as for the female-male thing, what? You're not going to have somebody that can help you win football games on your team because she's got a shower in a different shower? I think that's stupid. Okay? You have the guys have their showers. There's plenty of facilities and separate showers and separate dressing rooms and what have you in the tunnels, in the facilities, in these brand new, enormous, opulent stadiums. You're telling me in Dallas there's not another shower for Carly Lloyd, another dressing room? I mean, let's face it. Kickers also don't even hang out with the teams anyway. I mean, have you ever been to training camp? They don't even allow the kickers to be around the regular guys. It's like, oh, who's that guy? Is he on a different team? No, he's actually just the kicker. We're just not allowing him to be around the linebackers. I mean, kickers are ostracized anyway by being kickers. So it's not like, oh, well, she's got to be one of the guys. If she lines up and kicks 55-yard field goals, every dude in that locker room would high-five her and embrace her on the team. There is no doubt in my mind, which is why I've always felt like the gay stigma of, oh, the NFL is not ready for gay players, is stupid. It's dumb. It's ignorant nonsense for people that don't like gay people. It's homophobic rhetoric. Oh, well, it would never be accepted in the NFL locker room. Look, are there some NFL players that are homophobic? Yes. Just like there are some people that are homophobic in every family, in every business, in every company, everywhere. But the vast majority of players do not give a rip. If you're gay, if you're not. If you're black, if you're white. If you're this, if you're that. They don't care. If you help win, that's the only freaking thing that matters. I mean, these guys have daughters. These guys have wives. These guys have sisters. And I hate to say it, but if you got a domestic abuser on your team and he's an all-pro, it's like, well, yeah, well, you know, we all get mad sometimes. They don't care. They don't care as long as you help win. So if Carly Lloyd steps in there and can stroke a 55-yarder, if she can, look, if she makes the Bears field goal from 44 yards out, they love her. End of story. Will it happen? Well, I think we're getting to a point where there are multiple coaches and GMs that are thankfully no longer built out of the old school of, can't have girls on the football field. I think we've grown out of that. A lot of those guys have thankfully died that thought like that. And now it's about looking everywhere for players. And Carley's coach says that two different GMs have reached out about a tryout. I think there would be. I think they're absolute. Now, maybe the tryout wouldn't be publicized. Maybe you wouldn't have Carly Lloyd try out at training camp where there's assembled media and have her kick against five other dudes. But I'm sure you would bring her in for a private workout and have her at the facility and see what happened. And here is the biggest point that I think is the most important dynamic. It's not like Carly Lloyd is some, you know, inexperienced, dainty female that is coming in to play against the big aggressive men. Oh my God, how will she handle it? She's a freaking World Cup champion. She's one of the best in the world at what she does. And you know what she does? Kick balls. She's a kicker. She kicks inflated balls. She's one of the best in the world to do it. And she does it in stadiums that fit 80,000 people at the World Cup level. And she's one of the best in the world at what she does. So this idea like, oh, I don't know how she would handle that pressure. She's winning World Cups. She is, her goal in the 2014 or 2015 World Cup was from like 60 yards away. Carly Lloyd has been in pressurized situations. She has played against elite competition. She's an athlete. She is a legit athlete that just happens to play a different organized sport, but her profession is kicking balls. So, yeah, I think she could do it. If she's not one of the 32 best kickers in the world, I'm convinced she's one of the best 55 kickers in the world. So maybe she wouldn't make an NFL team, but I don't think it's crazy to bring in anyone who's in the top 55 of this if she had technique and practice and purpose. I mean, no. Do I think right now she is one of the 32 best NFL kickers in the world? Probably not. Do I think if she committed herself to technique? I think any woman at that level that has the power that she can create with her leg is a candidate to be a kicker in the NFL. We've already seen female kickers in college football at Division I Power 5 programs. It is not crazy. We've had female kickers in high school football for like ever. We've had female kickers in college football, Power 5 programs. This is not that crazy. And I think we're going to see it. Because you know what else? Female athletics has gotten so much better. Title IX was in the 70s. We now have 40 years of Title IX, where there's equality for female sports at the collegiate level, at the academic level. Well, that meant resources went up. That meant that coaching got better. That meant more importance was placed on it. And that meant that competition was better. And so our female athletes today are so much better than they were 40 years ago. They're so much better today than they were 10 years ago. The money and the coaching and the technique that is put into female athletics now and the female athletes is so superior that these women are so good at what they do, so unbelievably good, and it's not even close to what their predecessors used to be, that you have to throw out what you used to believe about female athletics. You've got to throw it out. It changes more dramatically every year. I mean, ask anybody that follows or covers the Women's World Cup. They're like, the Women's World Cup every 4 years revolutionizes itself because the women are so much better. It now makes millions of dollars. It's a smart financial play. And once it becomes a smart financial play and money gets soaked into it, you just get better everything. Better athletes, better transportation, better coaching, better technique, better wellness, better health, better support systems, all of this. I mean, look, I'm convinced it's going to happen in my lifetime. I don't know if that means that Carly Lloyd's the first NFL kicker that's a female, or it means that somebody 10 years from now or 15 years from now, but I think it's going to happen. female athletes are just so freaking good these days that it is no longer crazy to think that they can do things that a previous generation could not do, and they can do it well, and they could do it at a guy's level. 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, and on Twitter, DA on CBS. And I'll tell you, I mean, if Carly Lloyd does end up becoming the first female kicker in the NFL, then the legacy of this women's national team takes a totally different, I mean, just another unbelievable kind of groundbreaking, ceiling-breaking level of importance long-term. I mean, they're already probably the greatest female soccer team of all time, and what they have meant politically to many groups and what they have meant to, I mean, if they're also the team that breaks through to the NFL, my goodness. When we come back here on the DA Show, can the Royals ever claim money problems if their team's worth $1 billion?
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.